Welcome to Hungry Dads, your guided tour through the delicate and often overwhelming balancing act between food indulgences and social acceptance. And now, as always, here are your hosts, Rod Budget and Hugh Gallen.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Hungry Dads. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
And I don't want to blow anyone's mind out there, but I'd like to immediately start off this week's show by playing a clip from last week's episode.
I don't know what you're drinking, but I'm taking my dark cola and going home.
I am left with grape, which I don't think... I don't think it's terrible.
Rod, I think it's terrible.
So as you heard and you may recall, Hugh and I conducted the Great American Food Draft last week, and one of the categories was choosing different soda flavors to concoct a hypothetical three-soda suicide. Just to briefly recap again, Hugh chose traditional cola, cherry cola, and lemon-lime cola. Then I drafted root beer, orange soda, and grape soda, to some groans and some concern from the fans. Well, folks, the soda suicides are about to make the transition from hypothetical to very, very real. Before me, I have a Barks root beer, a Crush orange soda, and a Sunkissed grape soda. Hugh, it looks like you've got a triumvirate of flavors yourself. What you got over there?
Yep, I've got a Sprite because I had a lemon lime. I have a Coke because I had a cola, and I have cherry Pepsi for my cherry cola.
I think it's interesting that we each got different brands. It's a true three soda suicide with different brands of the flavors. So, Hugh, I'll let you do the honors, put on the safety goggles, let's get out the beakers, see what kind of monstrosity you can create over there.
As you know, I like my drinks cold, so I have a measuring cup. I'm going to actually measure equal amounts of each drink. I guess I'll ask you, in a suicide, I'm sure it's not that particular, but I'm going to go ahead and take a scientific method and do a precise amount of each.
I think for this experiment, trying to get as even as possible between the three sodas is the way to go.
As we've learned from prior episodes, I like my soda very cold. I also have some ice, so I'll be chilling it before I take a sip. First, I will add 4 ounces of Sprite.
We're going with a Sprite base, folks. The Sprite will be added first. He has just cracked open the can of Sprite.
Now, I think it's important to open with the Sprite because you're going to see the coloration change.
Right.
More precisely. So the Sprite has been poured. Now I will go ahead and pour the Coke.
The Coke. This should be an interesting color mixture. We'll have to observe. The seal has been broken.
All right, and it's got the coloration of a light-colored cola, and now the cherry.
I think the cherry is going to add the flavor. My guess is going to be it's going to taste mostly like a cherry cola, although I'm interested to see what the lemon-lime does to it. It's adding some ice. Here's some good carbonation over there.
All right. Let me just
give it a
little
swirl. Why don't
you describe
the coloration, the texture?
There's nothing surprising here. It has the precise color of a cola and the bouquet, as I smell it, of a cola. The cherry comes out the most.
Notes of cherry.
Not surprisingly. Big note of wild cherry. I don't pick up the Sprite at all. In fact, if I'm making a guess, I don't think I'm going to be able to tell that there's Sprite in this. Let me just take a drink. You can pick up the Sprite, surprisingly.
Interesting. Describe the flavors, what's going on there in your palate.
The Sprite hits me first. The Sprite hits hardest. If I were to close my eyes and not see the color, I'd notice lemon-lime on my lips first. And then the aftertaste is the cherry. The cola is present throughout, but it is definitely second to the lemon-lime first and then the cherry last.
The lemon-lime being the lighter-colored soda, maybe psychologically it seems weaker or would be absorbed by the darkers, but maybe the color has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, to my surprise, I completely pick up the lemon-lime flavor. Tastes delicious. Tastes good. It certainly doesn't taste odd. If someone handed this to me and I didn't know what it was, I would probably just... If it was dark, I'd assume it was cola. If it was light, I would assume it's lemon-lime. So no surprises here. It's quite tasty, which should be a comparison to what you are going to put together. Maybe it'll be tasty, but it certainly won't be normal.
I think mine will be a little bit more out there, so I have my Barks Root Beer, Crush Orange, and Sun-Kissed Grape in front of me. I'm not going to measure them out. I'm not as exact or scientific as Mr. Gallon, but I will eyeball them, and I am going to start with the root beer as my base. So I will pour some root beer in. Nice carbonation. I'm not using ice because these are already chilled down, and when my sodas are chilled, I don't need any ice. I'm now going to add the orange to the root beer. All right. It's turning kind of a golden hue. Looks kind of like beer almost. And now this should be really interesting. The grape to the orange root beer mixture. Yeah, the grape seems dense. It's sinking to the bottom. It's turned it from the golden color to kind of looks like a dark cola now. If I just looked at this, I would think it was maybe Coke or Pepsi. But here goes nothing. I am going to take a drink of the grape orange root beer suicide. The grape comes through the hardest for sure. It's not bad. It's pretty tasty, actually.
Really? Yeah. How does the root beer work with the grape?
I'm going to take another drink and try to be a little more descriptive. The root beer, I think, is the equivalent of your cola. It provides a lot of carbonation, I think, whereas sometimes I find especially grape sodas aren't carbonated enough for me for whatever reason. They're heavy on the syrup. This has a lot of carbonation, but you still get a lot of grape taste. And I would say the orange is kind of lost a little bit. There's a little hint of orange at the very end. But I think the grape is a more dominant flavor. The root beer is kind of the constant fizz. And there's a tiny hint of orange at the end. But honestly, I like it quite a bit more than I thought I would.
Yeah, I am surprised the root beer isn't just ruining the whole Megillah. Because the other two can mix as fruit sodas. The root beer, I don't know. It's a very unique flavor, and I don't imagine it mixing with much, but you say it gets a little bit lost.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the base carbonation flavor, whereas the fruits, the grape dominates the orange, so it really kind of just tastes like, if you could imagine, a grape root beer, which does sound a little bit odd, but it's pretty tasty. So, Hugh, did you catch any of the Oscars the other night?
Yeah, I caught the beginning and, drifted away soon after. That's how I do it with most award shows.
Yeah, they're long, and I personally didn't see them this year. I don't have much time to see movies these days. Most of my time is consumed by the kids or covert eating. But I was excited to see that Birdman won Best Picture. I didn't know that a documentary about Colonel Sanders could gain mainstream acceptance, but kudos to the Birdman, Colonel Sanders. But this obviously isn't a movies podcast. We're here to talk about food, my friends. And tonight, a specific topic that we've touched on a lot during the podcast, food marketing. But rather than simply talk about it, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, Hungry Dads proudly presents the first annual Foodie Awards. Much like the Oscars, the Foodies will have various categories that span a wide array of food marketing. I will reveal a category to Hugh, read off the list of nominees, and then Hugh, who had no prior knowledge of the categories or even that the Foodie Awards existed before tonight, will act as the Foodie Committee and announce the winner. Does that make sense, Hugh?
Yes, it does.
As an added bonus, and as a way primarily to work my own opinion into the Foodies, I will reveal a hand-selected Gaggy Award for the marketing piece I find the most repulsive, stupid, or otherwise annoying in each category. The Gaggies are to the Foodie Awards what the Razzies are to the Oscars, the worst of the worst. Before we jump into the first category, one additional note. I, Rod Budget, myself, came up with the nominees based on my food expertise, marketing background, and general intellect. As you'll see, some of these categories are very, very broad, and the nominees are obviously not all-inclusive of all possibilities. I'm sure there are some favorites that listeners will say I missed, but these are the nominees, folks. Are you ready for the first category of the night, Hugh Gallon?
Ready.
Our first category of the night is Best Cereal Mascot. The nominees are Toucan Sam in Fruit Loops, Dig'em Frog in Sugar Smacks, Tony the Tiger in Frosted Flakes, Cap'n Crunch in Cap'n Crunch, and Sonny the Cuckoo Bird in Cocoa Puffs. Those are the nominees. Hugh Gallen, as the committee, it's your responsibility to select the first ever Best Cereal Mascot Foodie Award.
Well, these are some tough choices, some excellent nominees, and the first thing I'm going to say is, for my criteria, I'm not going to judge based on the cereal. I'm going to base on the mascot and the talent of the mascot, and I'm going to go with Tony the Tiger. I think Tony the Tiger has the personality and the positive message that a cereal mascot needs to bring. He is a little separate from the rest in that he's not just a crazy, wacky character. He actually has a mission, and it's usually to be great.
He was the favorite. I think that's the right choice. I think the others, as you said, are a little gimmicky. They're kind of these zany characters. Captain Crunch, not so much zany, but he's a human. That's always a tough obstacle to overcome in these mascot categories. And I think Tony the Tiger, I hope I didn't influence you in the breakfast episode, episode 19, I believe.
I got to say, you might have, but good press can't help but affect the vote here. And that's to take nothing away from the other nominees. I'm a big fan of most of them, but in the end, I think Tony sets himself apart.
They're great!
Okay, and now I'll reveal the Gaggy Award winner in the cereal mascot category. And that honor goes to Chef Wendell of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Ah, Wendell.
I didn't know he even had a name until I did some research. Our listeners can probably picture him. He's an older man, a chef. He wears a chef hat. He has rosy cheeks. And listen, I mean, maybe he conveys the Cinnamon Toast Crunch feeling of warmth and cooking your toast, and he's a chef. But it's cereal. It's Cinnamon Toast. It's not complex. I don't need a chef to cook my cereal.
I seem to recall, and I could be completely wrong, misremembering, Wendell being like the whipping boy of those commercials for some reason. Like, again, could be totally wrong, but I feel like he was always like screwing up or something. I have to look that up on YouTube, but I remember like, oh, Wendell, or something like that, because I remember him having a name.
I hope that is correct. Our next category of the night is Best Fast Food TV Commercial of All Time. The nominees are Kate Upton in a bikini for Carl's Jr., Yo Quiero Taco Bell for Taco Bell, The Showdown, Larry Bird versus Michael Jordan for McDonald's, Where's the Beef for Wendy's.
Not as tough a category as the first one. I can immediately tell you that Kate Upton and Yo Quiero Taco Bell weren't my cup of tea. You got a classic like Where's the Beef in there, and then you've got something that just really, really speaks to part of my life, which was, you know, the Jordan versus Bird campaign. Man, I'm torn between those two. I really think Where's the Beef was a cultural touchstone, so I'm going to give it to Where's the Beef, and that's voting for the people, for the populace. If I were voting for my personal favorite, it would be the Larry Bird, Michael Jordan. But if I'm voting for what I think really had an effect on society in a very real way, Where's the Beef has to take it.
I think that's the right stance. I think that's responsible. As your committee of one, you're kind of looking out for the good of all the people. I think Where's the Beef was probably the biggest favorite of the night going into the night. It would have been an upset. Where's the Beef, as you said, is a cultural icon. It's one of the greatest and most beloved and well-known TV ad campaigns of all time, regardless of food or not food.
And it really is still funny. I don't know, for whatever reason, I watched the ad again on YouTube recently, and that old lady saying, "Where's the beef?"
it's
still really, really funny.
It certainly is a big bun.
It's a very big bun.
Big fluffy bun.
It's a very big fluffy bun.
Where's the beef? Where's the beef? Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
And now for the Gaggy Award in the Best Fast Food TV Commercial. And this isn't necessarily the worst fast food TV commercial, because it has to be well known enough for it to be in the category. The Gaggy goes to Wake Up With The King by Burger King. And this was an entire campaign of the creepy Burger King guy in the big plastic mask. And the specific commercial, they're promoting a new breakfast sandwich. I forget what.
Croissant sandwich.
Double croissant sandwich, I think, or a croissant sandwich, that's right. But basically, the creepy king guy is in bed with a man who has just woken up and hands him a croissant sandwich, and they have some pillow talk about the croissant sandwich. Which, here's the thing, these sort of kind of zany, very quirky out there campaigns generally appeal to me, but this one just missed the mark. It just creepy without being funny.
I remember the negative buzz this one got, both publicly and then just amongst people I talked to, and I remember wanting to like it. I remember kind of wanting
exactly.
to go
That's
against the grain.
That's a great way to describe it. I want to like it, but I just don't.
And I wanted to be able to say to myself or others, and probably quite arrogantly, I get it where other people don't. But you're right. I couldn't really get over that because it just didn't quite have enough to be so quirky or the right kind of quirky where you could defend it.
Right. I don't think there's anything to get other than that it's creepy. Our third category of the evening, Best Food Villain. The nominees are Count Chocula in Count Chocula Cereal, The Hamburglar in McDonald's, Cookie Crook in Cookie Crisp Cereal, Trix Rabbit in Trix Cereal. Remember, the Trix Rabbit is always trying to steal the cereal. Those are the four nominees.
I'm thinking about this one really hard. If I'm thinking about a villain, I want to think who is the most menacing of this group. At first, I was thinking Count Chocula, but I think the Cookie Crook was the most dedicated to his crimes. The Hamburglar kind of had an innocence to him. But the Cookie Crook was being chased by the police on a regular basis. And I think the Cookie Crook was the most unrepentant for his crimes.
Yeah, I think having the word crook in his name, that's a pretty harsh terminology.
It was tough against the Hamburglar because I think he's it's funny. I think the Hamburglar just has a problem. I think it's like – I think he needs serious psychological counseling.
Yeah.
But I think the Cookie Crook is just a bad guy.
Yeah, I think that's right. The Hamburglar, like you said, there's a certain air of innocence about him almost. He always strikes me as kind of young, like he's a kid almost, burgling the hamburgers. But I hate to agree with you on all of these, but I think Cookie Crook is the right choice. The Trix Rabbit was a bit of a dark horse because most people don't even think of him as a villain, but he was always trying to steal the tricks from the kids, which is not...
I always say he was kind of a lovable loser, like a Wile E. Coyote type.
Yeah, that's what he is, and that's why he is not the best food villain.
He's trying to steal our Cookie Crisp. Where's the Cookie Crook?
Cookie Crook! You'll do anything to get the real cookie taste of Cookie Crisp cereal.
I know. It even looks like little chocolate chip cookies.
And for the Gaggy Award in Best Food Villain, it's the Noid from Domino's. From the 80s. Everybody might remember. Avoid the Noid. The Noid was a claymation character who basically tried to ruin your pizza by making it cold or stomping on it. The idea was that Domino's had hot pizzas, fresh delivered, and they looked great, which is fine. But I just remember at the time, even as a kid, just hating this Noid, which some might argue is the point. You're supposed to hate the Noid. But I went back the other day and rewatched on YouTube the Noid commercials, thinking, I bet it's cute now. I bet I'm going to chuckle. And I just didn't. I just hated the Noid even more.
I loved the Noid. Big Noid fan. We were a big Noid family. We gathered around when the Noid commercials came on. So I don't think I can agree with you there. I had a Noid figure. Big Noid fan. Couldn't have told you then or now that it was Domino's Pizza. But love the Noid.
Wow. A huge Noid fan who doesn't know what the Noid is, apparently.
I really remember the Noid, but I wouldn't have remembered what pizza chain he was with. I probably would have guessed Domino's, but I wouldn't have been sure.
For all of our listeners out there, that is called vampire creativity, when you can remember a commercial or a mascot but cannot connect it with the proper brand, and that's a very big concern for marketers. Okay, two more categories. The buzz is palpable now. We're getting towards the end of the night. Next category is Best Food Jingle or Song. The nominees are What You Gonna Pick by Hot Pockets, I Wish I Were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, Mentos Fresh and Full of Life, Gimme a Break by Kit Kat, I Want My Baby Back, Baby Back, Baby Back, Baby Back Ribs by Chili's, and Give Your Breath Long-Lasting Freshness with Big Red. We have a lot of nominees. There are a lot of possibilities. This is a tough category.
Hmm. This is a tough category. I have some fairly easy eliminations. Maybe not, man. I would love to be more interesting, but I'm going to stay true to my conscience and to my strategy so far. I'm going to give it to Oscar Mayer Wiener. Again, it's a cultural touchstone. It's gone into pop culture more so than the others. And so Oscar Mayer Wiener, while the rest are very, very admirable, I don't think any have the same ubiquity in culture.
This was a strong category. I mean, you could go one of many ways.
And this isn't to say that it's my favorite. In fact, it's not even close. My favorite is probably either the Mentos or the Hot Pockets one.
Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer Wiener. That is what I truly like to be. 'Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
And the Gaggy Award for Best Food Jingle or Song goes to Subway and their $5 footlong jingle. I just never could get behind this. $5 footlong. It just didn't do it. It kind of seemed like a lazy kind of jingle. They're obviously just trying to hammer home the price point, but it didn't do anything for me, and it's fairly recent. Given the technological advances in audio equipment and resources, they should have come up with something better. Even if they're trying to be simple, they can still be creative, and I didn't even think this was creative.
Yeah, I suppose, much like the Noid, I like annoying things. Again, I'm not in love with it, but I'll defend it. It doesn't deserve an award. It certainly doesn't deserve a foodie, but I would defend the $5 footlong. I think part of its charm is that it literally just keeps repeating the same direct, clear message over and over again in a mildly attractive jingle. I like it. I take that as quirky.
And finally, our last category, and I think this is the equivalent to best actor or actress. This is best food mascot in a non-cereal or restaurant role. The nominees are the Jolly Green Giant, Mr. Peanut, Charlie Tuna, the Pillsbury Doughboy, Chester the Cheetah, and the Kool-Aid Man. This is an all-star cast. These are hard hitters. This is going to be tough.
Boy, I mean, as I go through these, as I look at the list, the first thing that I asked myself was, who is currently being utilized and is relevant today? And I actually think some of these are a little bit dated. And when that happens, they tend to resurge over and over again. But if I see several of these have had a lull or lulls that are longer than the others. And the ones that I see is still used all the time are Pillsbury Doughboy and Chester Cheetah. And Mr. Pillsbury Doughboy has a longer history, so the foodie goes to Pillsbury Doughboy.
Wow, that is a big accomplishment. I think it's a good decision. He has been around forever. He's lovable. He laughs when you press his belly button. I think Mr. Peanut's probably eliminated in my mind because he doesn't talk, or if he does, doesn't talk much. I don't know if I've ever seen him express himself. Charlie Tuna, you know, he's a bit dated, but a good guy. Kool-Aid Man, you gotta love him for just crashing through the walls, but I don't think he's around that much anymore.
Yeah, I think he's great in a retro fashion,
yeah.
But I don't think he is recognizable or appreciated by today's generation.
Jolly Green Giant, he's kind of similar to the Pillsbury Doughboy in that he's been around forever, but you know, he says, ho, 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 Green Giant, but that's really all he does. He just kind of stands there looking majestic, which is pretty cool, but I don't think it's as cool as laughing when somebody presses your doughy belly.
Tonight I'd like to do a Food for Thought segment, but instead of my normal Food for Thought where I just sit here and tell you what I think about some food issue, I actually took a food issue and brought it into my regular life. For our listeners and for science itself, I decided last week that I would try a 3-day all-fresh juice diet.
Wow. Really? You did this?
Yes, I actually did. And I chronicled the experience, and I'd like to play a little piece to help share my experience with the listeners. I will note before we play this piece that before I started, I expected that this kind of thing would be pretty easy, kind of annoying, and fairly interesting to experience. So how did I do? Let's listen.
Juice cleanse day 1. The time is 7:30 a.m. I'm drinking hot water while my children eat cereal. 9:19 a.m. First day of the juice cleanse. Still haven't had any juice. And we're on our way to get a juicer and fruit.
And vegetables.
And vegetables. 11 o'clock a.m. on the first day of juicing. This is the first juice with pear, spinach, cucumber, and celery. This will be a green juice. It's 12:51 on day one, and I'm pretty hungry. I'm watching my kids eat lunch, and I'm wishing I was eating it. 4 o'clock p.m., I just finished my third juice, and it tasted good. Hunger isn't the main issue right now. I'd say I'm just a little out of it. It's not the juicing that's hard, it's the parenting without as much energy. 5:17 p.m., I was making dinner for the kids, and a piece of rice stuck on my hand. And I instinctively went to put it in my mouth, but it hit my lips and I immediately spit it out, thereby maintaining the integrity of the juice project. It's 9:40 p.m. It's the end of day one. I had 5 juices. I am pretty hungry. I have a headache. And I'm going to go to bed now. 6:35 a.m. This is the start of day two. I woke up feeling neither fantastic nor horrible, which is normal for any given day. It is becoming apparent this juice project is less of a cleanse and more of a simple test of willpower. 10:11 a.m. I don't feel good. I don't feel horrible, but I'm definitely sluggish. I'm not looking forward to the next juice. 11:37 a.m. The shake with some papaya in it from about a half hour ago seems to have kicked in, and my blood sugar's up, and I feel better. Headache's gone for the first time today. I actually feel pretty good. 2:40 p.m. I just got done making another juice. I think one of the reasons you lose weight, or it's considered healthy, is because you spend so much energy making the juices that by the time you've made it, you've burned every calorie you might get from drinking it. Other than parenting, the last 2 days have been filled completely with cutting fruit and juicing fruit. The fact that I now have to cut $60 worth of fruits and vegetables to prepare them for the juice is equally daunting as the thought that all I'm drinking is juice for the foreseeable future. 5:20 p.m. Right now I feel okay because I just drank a juice. I've come to the realization that there's about a 30-minute window of feeling pretty good after drinking a juice, and then it tends to go back down into general lethargy and a little bit of a headache. Been a pace of a juice about every 2 to 2.5 hours. 7:45 p.m. The kids are both in bed. Normally I'd have a couple hours where I'd get some things done, and I just don't have it in me to do that. I'm going to bed. Oh, and Mrs. Gallen told me that my eyes look black and sunken in. It's 8 o'clock, I'm hungry, and I'm weighing my options between how tired I am and the energy it will take to make another juice, clean the juicer, take it apart, put it back together, all of that energy versus going to bed hungry. And really, I'm going to be hungry either way, I just won't be hungry for the next half hour. That said, I'm going to do it, I'm going to make another juice. 6:16 a.m. on day 3 of the juice project. Woke up feeling not amazing. 5:28 p.m. I'm commuting home through Grand Central. I was at work all day, had 3 juices, and felt like a pretty normal day. I'm actually having to hustle right now because I gotta catch my train, and I have the energy to move like normal. So, Grand Central has several bakeries that smell delicious, and I often succumb to them. But not today, because I have juice when I get home. 7:17 p.m., and I'm taking out the trash. And I notice to the curb, our trash is extremely heavy. heavier than ever because it's full of fruit and vegetable pulp. I just had another juice, so I had the energy to pull that to the curb.
8.06 p.m. on the third and last day of the juice project. I just drank my last juice. I am ready to be done with this. I'm okay. I'm hungry, but not exhausted anymore. Overall, days one and two weren't great. Day three seemed to go fine. I feel neither better nor worse at this point. This ends the juice
first question project. Right off the bat. Did you weigh yourself before and after? Did you lose weight here?
I did not weigh myself before and after because it wasn't about weight. This wasn't a weight loss thing. It really was purely for the morbid curiosity of experiencing it. I had no health goals. I just wanted to experience it. I also didn't have many preconceptions about whether it would work or not or be good or not. And I think in the end, I think it's possible that if I'd have continued, I actually would have continued in a path of healthy living. But I also think I'd have been less happy. So I don't think juicing is a horrible idea. I think it's not for me. And I think for me, it didn't enhance my lifestyle. But after the first day, I'm convinced that it didn't make me miserable either.
Well, the thing you touched on that I've always thought about with juicing is just how much work it is. I mean, you said you're burning calories and you're not taking a lot in. So by the time you've made the juice, you're exhausted. It's cutting, it's chopping, it's mixing, it's cleaning. It's just a lot of work for not a lot of food in the end, you know?
Absolutely. And some people do juicing programs where they like get juices delivered or they go to a store. That would maybe be more pleasurable because the actual process of getting that fresh juice is a royal pain.
And the only other observation I had was it sounded like maybe did you do the first 2 days on the weekend and the third on a work day?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to this, and I can as well. It seems like the weekends would be more challenging, probably, because we're busy with the kids. It's not like we're just sitting around, but at work, you're, like, not thinking about it as much. You're going about your business. You're usually busy, whereas at home on the weekend, I'm obsessing about food and, like, what is there to eat? I'm around the house. Is there something to snack on? When I'm at work, I don't think about it as much.
You're absolutely right, and I'll add to that I tend to be more exhausted at the end of a Saturday or Sunday with the kids than I do on a day at work. I work hard at work, but I work harder on a day home, full day with the kids. Physically, I'm more exhausted. So my exhaustion at the beginning and end of each day, it's actually more telling about me and the way I get tired than about the juice. I do think it was enhanced by the juice. I think I was more tired at the end of the day and maybe a little more tired in the beginning of the day. But I think by the third day, I actually had evened out.
I think it's impressive and noble, and I think the most impressive part of the entire 3-day juice off was that you started it without a juicer. Hungry Dads! Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production. Hugh looking dashing tonight, by the way, in a tuxedo.
Yes, nothing but the best. It's a Prada. It's Prada the handbag, right? I don't know. It's a Prada tuxedo.
They probably
yeah, let's just say they make a tuxedo.